Welcome back, Missio family. Today, you'll hear Pastor Josh talk about how Jacob deceived his brother and his father, only to be deceived himself. He found redemption through wrestling with God and accepting his promise. If you have any questions about Missio, you'd like to join a missional community, or you have any prayer requests, please contact us at missio.life.
Welcome, welcome. So glad that you are here with us today. We're going to continue on our series, The Hall of Faith. But as we think about life and story, you ever wonder how boring our lives would be if we didn't have stories? It would be pretty boring, right? Stories are what we understand life through. We tell stories, we hear stories, we relate to other people through stories. My guess is that between the time you walked through that door and the time you sat down in your chair, you probably told and heard some stories this morning, am I right? Because that's what we do. We live in story. We are created to understand life through story. It's the way God designed us. And if you've been a part of our church for any amount of time or been around, you've heard us talk about the importance of story. And we learn from story from the Bible. Obviously, it's a grand story. It's God's big story. But there are four movements that we understand from the Bible. First one is creation, right? It's where everything began. Fall, where everything kind of went wrong and everything came off the rails. Redemption, which is Jesus, and he redeems us. And then restoration or new creation, which is coming in the future, where everything is put back to how it should be. And so we see this in the Bible as four movements of story. But these four movements of story are actually in our lives as well. Every human being has a creation, fall, redemption, restoration. Creation, let me just explain this for a minute, speaks to your origin. Where are you coming from? What are you looking to for fulfillment? Maybe your identity is found in creation. Then fall, we've all had some bad stuff happen in our lives, some reasons why things aren't going the way that we want them to. Someone's to blame, either someone or something, and so that's the fall. What are we blaming for why things aren't the way they're supposed to be? Redemption is, what do we look to for hope to fix our current situation? So some people look to, again, the government or to some kind of reform, and they're trying to fix things. What's that redemption look like? How can we make things better? And then restoration is that future picture of when everything is this way, my life will be great. And we all live with these four movements in our lives. And once you begin to see them and understand life through these four movements, you actually notice they're everywhere. They're in books, they're in movies, because it's the way that God designed story to work. Let me give you an example. I've used this before. I'm going to use it again. I love this movie, Top Gun Maverick, right? You guys have seen this, a lot of you. And the gist of this is it's got the four movements, right? So Maverick is this fighter pilot. His creation is that he is a fighter pilot. That's his identity. And he actually says a line in the movie. He says, I'm a fighter pilot. It's not what I do. It's who I am. So he actually makes the statement of identity from that. Well, his fall comes when he hot rods the very expensive airplane at the beginning and crashes. And he gets kicked out of the Navy. Now he's no longer a pilot. He's no longer in that role of being a fighter pilot. His redemption comes when Iceman brings him back and says, you're going to be the instructor, the flight instructor for the Top Gun school, and you're going to train all these pilots how to fly this mission. That was his redemption. Yes, I'm back to being a pilot. And his restoration came at the very end of the movie when he completes the mission. He patches things up with Rooster, his old partner's son, and everything is great. And I don't know if you guys liked the movie. I thought it was fantastic. But part of the reason it was so good is because those four movements were so clear. And God has designed us to comprehend story this way. And again, we get it from his grand story in the Bible. The reason I tell you all this today is because we're going to be looking at a character in our series today. Is we're talking about a guy named Jacob. And we want to look at his story through these four lenses of creation, fall, redemption, and restoration. And we're going to see how God took this man's life and story and made it a whole lot better. And so before we jump into this text in Genesis 25, if you want to flip there, I'm going to be in the NLT this morning. If you want to get there, you can sure do that. Let me give you a little bit of the biblical timeline of the narrative of where we're at. We talked about Adam and Eve. Everything started there, right? Had some problems in the garden, had to leave. Then they had a whole bunch of kids, and humanity got really evil. And God said, you know what? I'm sorry I ever made you guys. And I'm going to start over with a guy named Noah and his family. And so God destroyed the earth by flood. We talked about that. And when Noah and his family got off the boat, he said, all right, be fruitful, multiply. And they did. And they had a lot of kids. And then everybody kind of just went evil again. And it just is the cycle, right? But you fast forward to Abraham. And we talked about Abraham and how God chose Abraham to be the father of a nation, a father of this people group called Israel. Well, Abraham and Sarah were having trouble getting pregnant. And we talked about this last week. They actually did eventually have a child named Isaac. Abraham was 100 and Sarah was 90. So that was a miracle, right? God brought that to fruition. That actually happened. And then Isaac had twins, two sons, twin boys, Jacob and Esau. And that's where our story takes place today. So Jacob is the son that we're going to look at, one of the two twins. And we're going to start reading in Genesis 25. So if you have a Bible and you want to be there, follow along. Otherwise, we've got it on the screen. And I'm going to start in verse 19. This is the account of the family of Isaac, the son of Abraham. When Isaac was 40 years old, he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Paddan Aram, and the sister of Laban, the Aramean. Isaac pleaded with the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was unable to have children. The Lord answered Isaac's prayer, and Rebekah became pregnant with twins. But the two children struggled with each other in her womb, so she went and asked the Lord about it. "Why is this happening to me?" she asked. And the Lord told her, "The sons in your womb will become two nations. From the very beginning, the two nations will be rivals. One nation will be stronger than the other, and your older son will serve your younger son." And when the time came to give birth, Rebekah discovered that she did indeed have twins. The first one was very red at birth and covered with thick hair like a fur coat. So they named him Esau. Then the other twin was born with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so they named him Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when the twins were born. So Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau, and this is crazy, right? Like, as they're coming out, like, Jacob's hanging on to Esau's heel. Have you ever heard of something like that? Like, I haven't been around a lot of, like, babies being born, but I think that's unusual. That this child is holding on to his brother's heel as he's coming out. And so let's talk about Jacob's origin, his creation, if you will. Jacob and his twin brother Esau, they're wrestling in the womb. Like, they're fighting it out. And I know brothers fight. Like, I have brothers and we fought a lot. But I don't know that we fought in the womb. I mean, that's next level stuff. And so they wrestled in the womb, and we knew that there was going to be this animosity. But even as they're born, mom and dad don't help the situation. Like, they have favorites. Like, dad likes Esau and mom likes Jacob, and they both play to their favorites. A little bit of parenting advice: don't do that. Don't have favorites in your home. It's going to cause a dysfunctional family, right? And so God had chosen Jacob to be the promise, to continue the promise of Abraham, his grandpa. So Abraham had this promise, hey, you're going to be a nation, you're going to have descendants more than you can count. Isaac then came after Abraham, and now Isaac gives birth to, well, he didn't give birth, his wife did, but he has a son named Jacob who's going to be the one of promise. So parents, don't favor your kids. That's what these guys did, and we're going to read about that. Start picking it back up in verse 27. As the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter. He was an outdoorsman, but Jacob had a quiet temperament, preferring to stay at home. Isaac loved Esau because he enjoyed eating wild game Esau brought home, but Rebekah loved Jacob. One day, when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau arrived home from the wilderness, exhausted and hungry. Esau said to Jacob, I'm starved. Give me some of that red stew. This is how Esau got his other name, Edom, which means red. All right, Jacob replied, but trade me your rights as the firstborn son. Look, I am dying of starvation, said Esau. What good is my birthright to me now? But Jacob said, first, you must swear that your birthright is mine. So Esau swore an oath, thereby selling all his rights as the firstborn to his brother Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and lentil stew. Esau ate the meal, and then he got up and left, and he showed contempt for his rights as the firstborn. So Jacob and Esau were treated differently by their parents. They were favored. These brothers didn't get along real great. One liked to go out hunting. The other one liked to be at home cooking, evidently. And Esau comes home and he's starved. He's famished. He says, I need some food. I'm about to die. I don't know if he's being overdramatic or if he really was that hungry. But he sells his birthright. Like, that's a big deal. To be the firstborn in their culture, you had rights and privileges. And I mean, sorry, Esau, bad idea. Like, he gave it up for lentil soup? Like, that's, I mean, you'd think he would at least get, like, a good meal out of the deal. But Jacob swindled his brother Esau out of his birthright for a bowl of soup. So he didn't care too much. The next movement that we see is the fall. Jacob is the deceiver. And we see this come into play towards the end of Isaac's life. They thought he was going to die. He ended up living quite some time after this. But Isaac can't see anymore. He's blind and he's laying on his bed. And his mom, you want to talk about dysfunction, the mom says, hey, Jacob, let's go lie to your dad and trick him so that you can steal something that belongs to your brother. Again, not a great family dynamic going on here. And so Jacob goes along with his mom, and they dress him up, and they put on this fur, this animal skin, so that he's hairy like Esau, and they rub a bunch of dirt on him so he smells like the field, and he tricks his dad. But his name means deceiver. And as I was working through this, I couldn't help but be reminded of a story. Some of you have heard this story before. Just go with it. But when we were first starting Missio, we met at the high school, Bismarck High School. And I remember one particular night, it was evening services, and it was about 30 minutes before we were to start, and I went to the restroom, and there was a man in there, and he was cleaning up. He was emptying the trash, and he was wiping things down, and I introduced myself. I said, hey, my name's Josh. I'm the pastor of this church. He said, oh, my name is Jacob. I'm one of the custodians here at Bismarck High. And I said, okay, nice to meet you. And so we had a little, you know, conversation. I said, you're welcome to join us if you want to stick around for the service. He said, yeah, I think I might do that. Okay, great. About two songs into the worship set, the sound goes dead. Like, it's like somebody just turned it off. And I think, Christian, you were up there leading, and I just saw, like, deer in the headlight look, and I looked up to the sound booth, and I'm seeing a lot of this going on. And so I go up there, and I start looking around, and here's the custodian in the next room. And I said, hey, Jacob, what's going on? He's like, oh, the sound was really loud out in the hallway, so I was trying to adjust the levels. Well, he's over there flipping off the power amps. I said, could you please wait and do that later, like after the service? Like, we're kind of doing something here. And, oh, yeah, I'm so sorry. And so I went back down to my seat, and another song later, and then the lights start flashing like crazy. I'm like, what in the world? And so I go back up there, and here he is again, unplugging the light board. And at this point, I'm starting to think, I don't know if this guy works here. And I realized in that moment that he might not be who he says he is. And so I said, will you please not do that? And like, whatever you're going to do with the sound system, do it after we're done. Okay, and he left and he took off. Well, I come to find out, see, Dave Wistoff's the principal there, and he normally does security for us. That was the only day he happened to be out of town. And I called him, and he's like, yeah, that guy does not work at the school. And he checked the camera footage, and turns out this guy walked in off the street, lied to me, told me he was a custodian, and he said his name was Jacob. I'm like, deceiver, right? And that's what his name meant. And I thought, this is like demonic or something. Like, how does he know to say his name is Jacob? Maybe it was Jacob. I don't know. He might have been on drugs too. I'm not sure, but he was being a deceiver. And ever since then, I've thought of this story. Like, Jacob was a liar. Like, that's what he did. He deceived everyone in his life. He was a trickster, and he lived into that. So he fooled his dad. He put on the animal fur, rubbed dirt on himself, and he went in and got this blessing from his father. Let's read about it. Genesis 27, when Esau heard his father's words, he let out a bitter cry, because Esau had come in after Jacob had been blessed, right? Oh, my father, what about me? Bless me too, he begged. But Isaac said, your brother was here, and he tricked me. He has taken away your blessing. Esau exclaimed, no wonder his name is Jacob, for he has cheated me twice. First he took my rights as the firstborn, and now he has stolen my blessing. Oh, haven't you saved even one blessing for me? And at this point, Esau's ticked. I mean, he's just gotten ripped off by his brother. And you think, okay, he's probably going to go out and pound him. Like, he's going to find him, right? It was actually worse than that. He wanted to kill his brother Jacob. This is what it says in verse 41. From that time on, Esau hated Jacob because their father had given Jacob the blessing. And Esau began to scheme, I will soon be mourning my father's death, and I will kill my brother Jacob. Well, Jacob's mom heard about this and said, Jacob, you need to get out of town. Like, your brother is going to kill you. And so they, again, you know, kind of schemed and came up with this plan. And Jacob left, and he went to stay with his uncle Laban to get away from Esau so he didn't get killed. Now, we can't really get into all of that part of the story, but there's some drama with Laban too. Like, Jacob was going to marry one of his daughters, and like on his wedding night, it's like, surprise, we have a different daughter here, and ends up working for him for a number of years and building his flock, and there's trickery and distrust, and it's just drama. But Jacob lived with Laban for all these years, and he lied. So why did he lie? Why did Jacob feel the need to lie to everybody he came in contact with? And this is what I think it is. He lied because he thought it gave him power or control over his situations. Like, he didn't like what the outcome was going to be in his life, so he lied. And isn't that what we do? If we don't like the way something's going to go, or we're afraid of what might happen when the truth comes out, we lie. We change the story. We change the narrative. It's a way of manipulation, of being in control, or at least thinking we're in control. But lying always catches up with us. There's always a price to be paid because it's sin. There's a price to be paid for lying. The crazy part is, Jacob didn't even need to lie to his father. He didn't need to pretend to be Esau. God had already said before he was born, Jacob's going to receive the blessing. You're going to be the one who gets the covenant promise to be this great nation. And yet Jacob is striving and trying and doing these things on his own to deceive his father to get a blessing that he already had. It's crazy. So I want to pause for two questions of discussion before we continue on. The first one is this. Who were some of the people in Jacob's life that were hurt by his lying? Who were some of the people who were hurt? Esau, his brother, how was he hurt? So he just got ripped off, right? Kind of a bad deal. What else? Who else got hurt?
His father.
Yeah, how do you think his dad felt after he left? Pretty disappointed, probably. Fooled, yeah. But he had the hair. He was hairy. Dang it. Who else?
Himself.
Jacob hurt himself. Because he had to leave, didn't he?
Yeah.
He had to flee. And how many years did he have to live on the run, looking over his shoulder, wondering if Esau's tracking him down? Like, he lost the relationship with his parents. He lost the relationship with his brother. Now he lives with his uncle. And that's a mess. He paid a lot. Big price. Second question, why does lying come so easily to us? Why is it so easy to lie?
Self-preservation.
Self-preservation. Does it actually preserve us, though?
No, but Satan tells us it does.
We believe a lie that lying will help us. Yeah. And the more we lie, isn't it? Don't you need more lies to cover up the other lies that you told so that you can keep the lie going?
You better hope you have a good memory to remember all.
Yeah, yeah. Got to remember all the previous lies. So why is it harder to tell the truth or to do the right thing?
That takes an actual effort.
Well, lying takes effort too.
But lying initially is just easy to say, oh yeah, okay. Whereas telling the truth means you have to work for it, you have to have integrity, you have to do what you need to do.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I'm looking for something. I think it makes us vulnerable.
Okay.
Right? If we tell the truth, there is a risk because we know we're no longer in control. I don't know what the other person's going to do. I don't know how they're going to handle it. But isn't it so much better to tell the truth?
Yes.
Almost like that was God's idea from the beginning. The third movement is redemption. So Jacob, his life's a mess. He's on the run, right? Brother's trying to kill him. That's his fall. Like, he's in bad shape. Now he needs redemption. And so we see he gets into a little wrestling match. Before I read that passage, I want to also mention that Jacob did have a vision. He had a dream one night that God appeared to him, and he was laying down on the ground. He's dreaming in a place called Bethel. And this is what it says in Genesis 28. During his dream, at the top of the stairway stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham, and the God of your father Isaac. The ground where you are lying belongs to you. I'm giving it to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. They will spread out in all directions, to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. And all of the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. What's more, I am with you and I will protect you wherever you go. One day I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you. So Jacob had this promise, and yet he still continued to live this sinister lifestyle and tricking people. And here's where his redemption comes. So Esau, him and Esau, still not on good terms. He gets word that Esau's approaching, and Esau's got 400 men, and Jacob's out there marching with his group. I don't know how many he had, but he's in the way back. Like, he's hiding out, and he's got his whole caravan in front of him thinking, well, they got to go through all those people before he kills me. And so he's coming up on Esau, and he gets a little skittish, and it's nighttime. They're not quite to where the other group is. And this is what happens, Genesis 32. During the night, Jacob got up and he took his two wives and his two servant wives and his 11 sons, and he crossed the Jabbok River with them. After taking them to the other side, he sent over all his possessions. This left Jacob all alone in the camp, and a man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. When the man saw that he could not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and he wrenched it out of its socket. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." "What is your name?" the man asked. He replied, "Jacob." "Your name will no longer be Jacob," the man told him. "From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won." "Please tell me your name," Jacob said. "Why do you want to know my name?" the man replied. Then he blessed Jacob there. Jacob named the place Peniel, which means the face of God, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been spared." The sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel, and he was limping because of the injury to his hip. So he's running for his life. He's trying to sneak out at night, leaving his caravan, taking just a few family members with, and he's going to get across the river. And basically, I can't face my brother Esau. I got to run. One last trick up his sleeve, right? An escape, a midnight escape. And God intervenes. He says, "No, Jacob, you're not running anymore." And he has an all-night wrestling match with this man that the Bible talks about. Crazy, right? Could you imagine wrestling somebody all night? It'd be exhausting. But he wrestles with him all night, and the man touches his hip, and like, bam, ooh, I got a, now he's got a, You got to put some icy hot on that thing, you know. He had that injury for the rest of his life. But Jacob has this interaction with this man, and we kind of wonder, okay, who was he wrestling with? Some people believe it was an angel. Some people believe it was Jesus. I tend to believe it was Jesus. We can disagree on that if you want, and that's fine. But angels oftentimes, when they were asked their name in the Bible, they'd said it. I'm Gabriel. I'm Michael. This was mysterious, right? And also, this man renamed Jacob, gave him a new identity. Sounds a little bit to me like what Jesus does for us. Gives us a new name, a new identity. So anyway, we can disagree on that if you want. Not a problem, not a deal breaker. But Jacob gets a new name. He has this all-night wrestling match with God, and he perseveres, and he says, you're no longer going to be called Jacob. You're no longer going to be a trickster, a supplanter, a heel grabber. Your new name is Israel. That's your purpose. That's why you're here. God had promised to make his family, his descendants, into a great nation and to even give him land. What's crazy about this encounter with God is it gives him a new sense of confidence, because the next day he does march out and meet his brother Esau. And instead of hiding at the back of the caravan, he gets to the front and he walks out and he marches out there to see his brother. And to his surprise, his brother doesn't want to kill him, which is good news. And so they make up, and Esau's like, oh man, so much time has passed. It's water under the bridge. Like, let's just be brothers. And they did. They restored their relationship. God brought redemption to Jacob's life, both with his brother, also with his identity and understanding who he was. It's a beautiful thing. The last movement is restoration. Jacob lives into his new name. He's now a man of faith. He doesn't have to be a man who lies, who manipulates, who tries to trick people. I'm a man of faith. I have a promise. God has called me for a purpose, and I'm going to live into that. And one thing I know about Jacob's story is that he finished better than he started, right? He started pretty rough. He started pretty bad, but Jacob finished better than he started. And how we finish for you and me is also so much more important than how we start. His relationship with Esau was restored, and we know that at the end of his life, that when Isaac finally did die, both Jacob and Esau were there to bury their father together. God brought restoration to his life. We know this also from Hebrews 11. It says, it was by faith that Jacob, when he was old and dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and bowed in worship as he leaned on his staff. So Jacob, now Israel, lives this long and full life. His son Joseph, I mean, that's a whole nother side story. We can't get into that. But Joseph was sold into slavery, right? Ended up in Egypt, managing Pharaoh's household, managing all the grain. Jacob's old and he moves to Egypt, gets saved by his son Joseph, who he thought was dead. I wonder where his brothers learned that, you know, trickery and you know, how to lie and stuff like that. Maybe from their old man. And Jacob, you know, he had a little favoritism going on with the coat of many colors and that kind of thing. But God used all of that. He said, I'm going to redeem your story. And I'm going to restore you and your family. And he died an old man, a faithful old man. He finished well. Two more questions for discussion. First one, why do you think God stopped Jacob from running away from Esau in the middle of the night? Why do you think God intervened in that situation?
Because your life can't change until you stop running and fix it.
Because your life can't change until you stop running? I would agree with that. What else? He had a plan to redeem his life. Almost like he loved him. And he wanted to do what was best for him. Yeah, it was like, hey, Jacob, how's things going for you? How's life working out? You gonna run again like this? You gonna keep the cycle up? He intervenes because he loves him. And he wants to give him a better story. Right? Second question. Why do you think an encounter with God could change your perspective?
because God created us and we can find out what we're made for from Him, as opposed to what we just think we're doing.
Yeah. What else? Why do you think an encounter with God could change our perspective? Or does it? Maybe it doesn't. What do you guys think? Almost like an encounter with God would reorient us a little bit, that it's not about us. What do you mean by that?
It's about bigger picture, like...
Bigger picture?
Like, I don't need to keep lying to my brother because I am... There's a lot bigger things going on instead of just...
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Because before, he was lying for what he could get for himself. Right? He was a very selfish person by lying. But now he has a bigger purpose. Well, I'm going to be the father of a nation. I'm going to have people like dust, you know, lots of people. And it was way bigger than his own life. Yeah, absolutely. Was somebody else going to say something over here? Forgot? Say it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, changes your identity, an encounter with God. In this case, and we saw that, you know, who else got a new name? Anybody remember? This is a review from a couple weeks ago. Saul, Paul, yeah, Abraham. Abram became Abraham. God says, I'm going to give you a new identity, a new purpose. Live into it. And he did. See, to know Jacob's story is to know a life of struggle, a hard life. Jacob was the con man who got conned. He was the liar who got lied to. And he was the manipulator who got manipulated. That's more of the Laban stuff, but he knew what it was to live a life of struggle and hardship. But yet God took his life. He said, you started out rough, bro. Like you and Esau, you were duking it out. You're fighting, you're tricking each other, you're stealing from each other. And they spent a lot of years separated and a lot of heartache. He said, I know your family's dysfunctional, but God, so I'm going to step in and I'm going to redeem your story. We're going to wrestle this out. But at the end of it, I'm going to give you a new name, a new beginning, a new purpose. And that's one of the things I love about the Bible and about these characters is sometimes we think of them as heroes of the faith. They're really not. They're just normal people, messed up, flawed, normal people like you and me. That's good news for us, right? God doesn't just take heroes of the faith. He takes average, everyday, ordinary people, and he says, if you will follow me, if you will trust me, I'll give you purpose. I'll give you a life that you can not even imagine. And I'll restore all the broken parts of your life that you think are beyond repair. Right? Anybody in here ever had their brother like wanting to kill them? Literally? I don't know. Maybe, I guess I should be careful with that. Maybe there are some people in here that have that situation, but... I'm pretty sure that there's people that are more jacked up in the Bible than we are. It should give us great hope. God is the God of second chances and of purpose and of redemption. And that's what he does. So no matter what your story started like, it may have started very bad. You may have had some really hard things happen in your life. God can redeem it. He can say, I can take your story and I can make it better. I'll give you a better version of your story. I'll give you a new name. I'll give you purpose. And guess what? It's going to get a whole lot better in the future. That's the good news for us. No matter how bad things get, no matter how much we've lied, maybe we're liars. Maybe we have broken some relationships. Maybe we've hurt some people. God says, it's not too late. You can turn from that. You can walk towards your brother. You can be restored in those relationships. But it all starts with us in our heart, right? Will I trust what God says about me? Will I make myself vulnerable and tell the truth? Will I show up and be present? Or will I hide? Will I lie? Will I deceive? I love the fact that Jacob was a messed up dude and God used him anyway. That gives me great hope for me and for you. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for loving us, for redeeming us, God, we thank you that that's what your story is. It's a story of redemption. And we see that in the life of Jacob, that he should have been given up on. He should have been written off. But Lord, you had a purpose for him. You had a plan for his life. And it was so much bigger than himself. So much bigger than just getting all that he could get. But Lord, you called him to be a part of your grand people, the people of Israel. And he had a role to play in that. God, we know that we're not called to that specifically, but you have plans for our lives. You have purpose for us. We're still living and breathing here today. So we know you're not finished with us. And we know that anything that you want to call us to requires faith, requires trust in you. So Lord, reveal to us the parts of our heart that we haven't given to you. Reveal to us the things that are wounded and maybe are guarded. We know that you want to restore what's broken. We love you, Lord. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Would you stand as we close in song?
Josh left us with a few takeaways from today's service. Creation, Jacob's origin. God had chosen Jacob to be the continuation of the promise to Abraham and to Isaac. Jacob swindled Esau out of his birthright for a bowl of soup. Instead of Esau having the firstborn birthrights, God told Rebekah that it would be reversed and that Jacob would have it. Fall, the deceiver. Jacob's name means deceiver. He lied because he thought it gave him power or control over situations. Jacob didn't need to lie to deceive his father and to get a blessing. God had already told his parents that the older would serve the younger. Redemption, wrestling match. Jacob would no longer be called trickster or heel grabber. His new name is Israel. Esau and Jacob make amends, and Esau doesn't kill Jacob like Jacob feared. Restoration. Jacob finished better than he started. And how you finish is far more important than how you started. Discussion questions. Who are some of the people in Jacob's life that were hurt by the lies? How are they affected? Why does lying come so easily to us? Why is it harder to tell the truth than to do the right thing? Why do you think God stopped Jacob from running away from Esau in the middle of the night? Why do you think an encounter with God could change our perspective? Thanks for listening, Missio family, and we'll see you again next week.